The podcast you are about to listen to discusses comic books and comic book related media. Be warned, the following will review art, plot, and themes, and will therefore contain spoilers of the materials discussed. Welcome to Comics League International.
It's been
3 months.
Has it? I think you're right.
February was the last time we met, I think.
Oh man, wow, that's way too long ago. Mm-hmm. I thought it was only like a month and a half, but you know, hopefully this will be the longest break this year. I have to admit, life happened. My 2-year-old had a 2-year-old birthday.
Yay!
Things go on. And as much as I love this show, sometimes, you know, life.
Life. I get it.
But we are back. I am Brent.
And I'm Lydia.
And let's talk some Starman. How's that sound to you?
Starman's fine, but I think we're doing my favorite character today.
Really? And what should that be?
The Shade.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yay.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's right. The Shade had a miniseries from April 19 of 97. It was a 4-issue miniseries. I kind of realized, as I'm saying miniseries here, you know, we've talked a few times about how growing up and even now that we're, adults and everything, that you've never been too much of a comic reader. Do you like it? Is miniseries just like a phrase that you can automatically put together and know what I'm talking about it, or is that just kind of like a technical term? I don't even know anymore.
I don't know how it's used like in the comic book context, but when you say miniseries, I assume that it just covers one story arc. Within a small number of issues?
Yes, that's exactly it, yeah. So, like, The Shade, from the beginning, they knew it would only be 4 issues.
Mm-hmm.
Where something like Starman, they put it out as an ongoing series. You know, maybe they knew it would be roughly 70 or so issues if they told the one story they wanted to tell, but it's considered ongoing, meaning that it didn't really have a set end.
Oh, okay. I get it.
Cool. Just wanted to make sure that we're all up on our buzzwords.
Yay! Miniseries.
Man. Yeah. Okay. So thinking back to the way back when of April 1997.
Yes. I did some research on what happened in 1997. Well, April 1997. I feel like we've talked about these things before.
We might
like,
have.
Right? Could it have been because this coincided with, you know, one of the Starman issues? I'm not sure. But things like, I'm pretty sure we talked about Steve Irwin, you know, Crocodile.
Mm-hmm.
Before.
Yeah. Because this is actually cover dated the same as the last issue of Starman we talked about, issue 29.
Yes, and I remember we also talked about Ellen DeGeneres coming out to the country. So that we talked about. So I was trying to look for things that we haven't talked about, and that was pretty hard.
We are pretty in-depth.
Yes. So, well, we sometimes also talk about tech because we love nostalgia. And
yeah.
So two tech things happened in April 1997, which was Microsoft releases Internet Explorer 4, and America Online begins service in Japan. I think we've talked about these, have we?
I think we talked about... Yeah, I think we did.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I remember talking about how I'd never really used America Online, but we had a lot of the CDs.
There were CDs for America Online.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you didn't get those?
No, we were never a fan of America Online, I think.
Not Singaporeans.
Yeah, I know. But we were very quick on the uptake of Hotmail, and but we loved Microsoft products. Mm-hmm. I remember. So immediately we had all the what do you call it? What's that client that Microsoft has for mail? Outlook.
Oh yeah, I never really used that either.
Yeah, my dad was a huge fan of that because my dad he used the internet a lot for his work.
Mm-mm-mm.
Yeah, so we had a lot of that. I remember back in the day, email wasn't very web based. Did you like we had to register with our mobile provider? Like the people who did our telephone line, we had to buy an email address from them.
Wow.
Did that happen for you?
Like I think the first email address I ever got might have been from Hotmail.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and then eventually I changed over to Gmail, and I forget exactly why. Mm-hmm. But I do think at some point my parents just had the email address from something like that. But this was...
Right.
Yeah, this was before email was really a big thing.
Yeah,
and my mom might have had an email address through her work.
Right, right. Yeah, the domain name would be something like very official.
Yes.
Right? So yeah. that was what happened for my family as well in the beginning, before web-based email providers were available. And I guess a lot of people don't really know what we're talking about if you're young. But if you're our age, you would know, that you would even remember the sound of the internet, you know, connecting, like, yeah, that one. Yeah, and you know, I was surprised to find out that sound was actually universal, because now, you know, people talk about the internet back in the day, and I'm like, oh, it's the same in the UK, the US, and Singapore, so it probably is the same in other countries as well. Like, that particular dial-up sound.
Yeah, yeah.
You would think it'd be different.
It's... What I like is watching when you rewatch movies from that time, and they have to have those moments in movies where they explain what the internet is. Because not everyone quite knew, like, yes, I'm going to be using the internet. The internet, you know, computers, web together.
Yeah, yeah. And they don't know what... Yeah, I totally know what you mean. I was just researching the history of the internet, and because it started in the American military, it used to be like, what, ARPANET, and then it went to DARPANET or something like that. So the defense ministry, they used it for, I don't know, intelligence or something, I'm not sure. But... Yeah, it was pretty much invented by the nice people at... what's that place with all the mad scientists? DARPA? It is DARPA, right?
I think so, but I'm not... I don't really know.
Yeah, what's the... DARPA is short for Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency. That's a branch of the American military.
This is the sound of me nodding my head, because usually when I hear about those, it's like a mixture of what's true and what was on like X-Files.
Yeah.
So there's probably like government divisions that I really couldn't quite tell you if it's real or if it's actually from like a Superman comic I read.
Yeah, I get it. Yeah. But yeah, I know. I totally know what you mean. That's so funny, though, because I read this article about DARPA, and it's like, they are, apparently a lot of Americans who know about DARPA, they think that DARPA is the place where, like, mad scientists congregate and make weird stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
But they actually have a lot of, like, you know, real contributions to
stuff
to society at large, and not just the military. So I think that's pretty cool.
Well, I read. Do you know the movie Hackers?
No, not really.
It was one of those, like, kind of early-ish computer/internet movies that was supposed to be set, like, you know, the 5 minutes into the future style movie. And I read a long article on the making of, and the most interesting thing about the article to me was where the first, like, third of the article tracing the origins of this movie was about the kind of beginnings of, I guess, hackers and like phone freaks and such like that. But the kind of, you know, this was back where at the very infancy of the internet, where, you know, people would, like, actually have to find phone numbers of, you know, I guess the government, and just dial in and phone numbers and try and do things that way. But that was fascinating. But we're getting very far afield in our first 10 minutes, when we know what folk really want to hear about is the shade number one.
The shade number one. That's right. Okay, so Brent, what do you have to say about that?
Well, what I have to say about the shade is it starts on a dark and stormy night. Well, maybe not so much stormy, but at least dreary and, you know, enough where there's puddles in the floor. And we have a guy walking through wondering who he is and why he is and what's going on. And then a gentleman all smile says, "Hey, buddy, you look like you're in trouble. Why don't you come with me and hang out with my family?" And, you know, there's lots of questions, and they bond, and they have a good time, and then there's all the, "We're gonna go take you to your real mom and dad. We'll help you out." Ooh, did we say help you out? We mean frame you for murder, 'cause we're evil. And, you know, they almost get away with it, too, if it weren't for those pesky shadow powers he has, because this young man with amnesia is actually the Shade. And he ends up, you know, killing everyone except for two twins, because he forgot about them. But that won't come back to haunt him, will it? It does. It so does. The end.
Yay! Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, that pretty much sums up that first chapter. Okay, so before we delve into it, let's talk about the cover.
Let's talk about it.
Okay. I like, first of all, how there is From the Pages of Starman.
Yes.
At the end, by the bottom of the cover,
mm-mm,
by James Robinson. And do we pronounce this guy, this Gene person's surname as Ha?
That's always how I've said it, but Ha. Yeah, I can't say for sure.
Yeah, it's either Ha or Hey, right? So I just English phonetics. Okay.
Yeah, right. And this is one of those things where, you know, I've realized recently that what I'm really bad at is checking up on the ethnicities, demographics of creators. I just kind of go like, "Oh, Gene Ha, I like his stuff." And you know, I'll admit, with a last name like Ha, I'd always kind of assumed he was a bit more Asian. But I have nothing to base that on other than it being Ha. And
When I see Ha, it's actually, I assume he's Cantonese, but I don't know. Because I know for sure that there are people who are Cantonese, and they have that surname.
And, you know, and I feel like that is something that is safer for you to assume and publicly say, "I just thought he was Cantonese," or I'd be like, "I thought he was Asian." Like, it just somehow me saying it just makes me feel like someone's gonna hear that and go like, "I can't believe that Brent guy."
But I just did a quick check. He is Korean.
So you're saying not Cantonese.
He's not Cantonese. Huh.
Internet knows everything. Thank you, DARPA.
For the record, there is a Cantonese surname that's pronounced Ha, which it's actually Xia in Mandarin. But there, yes, so there's a Korean surname, Vietnamese surname, and a Chinese surname. Mandarin, there's a Ha and there's a Xia. Oh, I can't get my intonation right. Xia. When Xia in Mandarin is Ha in Cantonese, so. Anyway, this is just for those of you out there who actually get what I'm saying. Thank you! Let's go back to the cover.
I like that it has obvious links to the story, and also little things that are just kind of like flourishes, like the little fairies in it.
The fairies? I just noticed them! You know, oh wow, okay, there's one, the third fairy from the left, the last one on the right, I kept thinking, why are there rabbit ears on this guy? And I didn't notice that there was I didn't notice that there were two other fairies there.
Yeah.
Oh, fairy, why do you think they're there?
I don't know, like, I keep going between just like, oh, I'll put them in because it makes it look a bit more... you know,
English.
Exactly. Or if it, in one version of the story, like we've talked earlier about how a lot of times the cover has to be kind of done first for production means. I'm not exactly sure why, but that's just what I've often heard. Yeah. If at one version of the story, if fairies played a role in it.
Okay, I get it. Yeah, but you know, it's one of those European things, and I would say that this story felt very European to me. I mean, yes. Obviously it was set in England and stuff like that, so... Okay, what else can we say about this cover? The family.
You know, I did find myself thinking that, like, it didn't really fit... the mood of the story. Like, it's not that I think it's a bad cover or anything, but it doesn't really, I mean, inside, once you open up, it feels very much like a love story to kind of gothic
I did get that,
gothic horror in a way. But this, like, maybe it's the green, maybe it's the tones of it, it feels much more pastoral. It feels like it's going to be like, yes, we're walking through the sun and the skies and having an adventure on a farm. Like, that's what this cover says to me. Like if you were thinking more English horror or, you know, Sunnybrook Farms, I'd say this is probably Sunnybrook.
I've not read that.
Neither have I, but just based on the name, I would think Farms.
Okay. Right. I, for one, felt that after reading the comic, I did feel that the cover was suited the tone of the story because...
Oh, nice.
Yeah, because I felt that there was a lot of blood on the family's hands, so the red was kind of like that.
Mm-hmm.
Like they shed a lot of innocent blood, and the expressions on the faces, they're all varied, and it shows the different kinds of twisted that they are, I think. And the way that they look like they are in a picture frame or a mirror or something, the ornate pattern of the frame thing. It also gives that kind of like feeling. I don't know. Do you know those? photo frames where it looks like a metal tree, yeah, and then yeah, you yeah, hang yeah. each member's face to show, like, the family tree.
Mm-hmm-hmm. I think so.
Yeah, it feels like one of those things. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I didn't even think about the blood connection. You might have sold me on the cover.
Mm, yeah, so that was what I thought. Oh, and I also really like the shade, the stylized font with the... I want to say his scepter, but I don't think scepter is used outside of king, of a context where it's like royal. Mm, so what do you call that? Walking stick?
His cane?
His cane, thank you. Yes, the eagle head.
Mm-mm.
It's like that. It's like through the H-A-D-E.
Mm-mm.
Yeah.
Nice.
Has it ever struck you that the shade is Hades with the S in the wrong place?
No, it hasn't. But I like it.
Yeah, it's like, because he can't die and stuff like that, so I'm just thinking. Yeah.
But... Should we go to the inside?
Okay, yes, let's.
Mm-hmm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, I'm in. I'm in the inside. Yeah, it is very I remember a few issues back you told me about film noir, and I actually went to Google it, and I do feel like this issue, this story has that feeling as well. Like,
yeah.
Gothic noir kind of thing.
Yeah. And I like how Gene Ha, his art is very, very different from Tony Harris, our usual penciler. You're never gonna look at the their lines and their figures and get them confused, but the way they can both deal in darkness, is a nice quality they both share. So a very fitting artist.
Yeah, I agree. What struck me the most, like, hey, wait, this isn't Tony Harris, was the softness. I don't know if this is the right one. I'm not sure if this is the colouring as well, but I felt like the expressions, everything was a lot more soft.
Yes.
Right? Yes. I don't know. I'm not trained in this, so I don't know how else to explain it, but that's what I got from this.
Yeah. No, I agree. Yeah.
Okay, so first scene. What's going on? Let's see. We have a young man. And he is walking through the cobbled streets of London. And he's like, he's trying to remember, right? Yeah. And I really don't know what's going on here. I mean, none of us are supposed to know, I think.
No.
Right.
Like how immediately we get that feeling that something is off, even from that first panel, you know, the head down, the hair looking a bit disheveled, and then as it pulls back, we get more and more of the reveal of, you know, the slight pant rip that we can see in the next panel, to even more damage on that bottom spread, and then when we pull back for the next page, where we have that splash page and title card and everything, even the you know, the buildings and everything just looks so ramshackle that it's not just this one man who's kind of, you know, inner monologue is disjointed isn't the word, but it's certainly lacking a clarity of what went on. But then it kind of just goes to not only this one person, but in a way, kind of the whole world has that same damaged quality.
Yeah, I completely agree. Like the homeless people and the skinny dog.
Yeah.
Yeah, it really does give gives the dimension a lot more credibility, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, and also, I kind of like that right away. I mean, admittedly, you know, this is a book called The Shade. But right away, the fact that this is the kind of cursive writing that we've seen used in Starman for when The Shade is writing in his journal, we get that hint off that this is The Shade walking around.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have that little connection. Oh man, I'm trying to remember if we've already gotten this in the main comic, mm-hmm. But we've had mentions of the bad dwarf before. I'm trying to remember if it had to deal, if we've seen the Shade's connection to the bad dwarf, but mm-hmm. we did have the, I think we have, but I know when we had, Jack's day in the circus.
Yep.
The pocket calculator, the little dwarf, mentions mm-hmm. that, you know, it wasn't him, it was the bad dwarf.
Yeah, I do have an impression of that.
Yeah.
Mm-mm. But that was quite long ago.
Yes.
Guys, you've done 26 episodes. 27th one, I think this last 27th one.
No, this is our 33rd episode.
Wait, what? Where did I get 26 from, though?
I have no idea.
Whoops. Okay, yes, so. Okay. Anyway, so yeah, it's hard for me to remember, but I do have that. I do remember that. It was not me, it was the bad dwarf, so.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay.
So this name of the book is A Family Affair, The Shade, and its writer is James Robinson. The artist and colorist is Gene Ha, letterer Chris Eliopoulos, and editor Chuck Kim.
Mm-hmm. Why is there a Piers 1838 there?
Place. I'm wondering if Piers is a reference to the man, the name, mm-hmm. the Ludlow man's name, Piers, like originally I thought it was the location, like, oh, this is the Piers part of England, sure, and then the year.
I get it. Like Piers, we met him in 1938.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Shall we turn the page?
Yes.
Okay. Clomp, 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 clomp. That's... I like how when I saw this, I knew immediately that there was a horse.
The clomp, clomp, clomp?
Yeah. I don't know. It was just so quiet. Maybe it was... It's, you know, growing up with all these British TV. I don't know. It's like... all our fairy tales... come from this country, and like you just have this, I don't know, what about, I don't know how it's like for someone who's who wasn't born in a family like mine, or I don't know, I want to say British colony, but a lot of people don't. Like my family was a bit unique in a sense that my mother, she was a huge fan of fairy tales, so she inundated my childhood with it. So it was always some sort of fairy tale movie, or bedtime stories would be fairy tales and things like that. Yeah, so I don't know. But when I first saw this issue, I was like, oh, I have many memories of this. Even though I did not grow up in... London, or I didn't have a cobbled street anywhere near my house, but clump, clump, clump did tell me that there was a horse coming. And yeah, I guess when you hear a horse on a cobbled street in London, you do have that, and then you see a carriage, you know immediately what kind of person is in it. It's somebody rich.
Yes.
Definitely, right? And then, so it made a lot of sense. I feel like it. This entire page really painted some sort of it paid tribute to those films and those stories of old where there would be this person coming to rescue the helpless.
Mm-hmm.
Like some rich person extending a helping hand.
See,
and then at the end we kind of realize that it's just a divine. Okay, yes.
Yeah, no, and right there, like I'm with you, but I also kind of get that feeling of you know, there's they made it into a movie as well, but there's the comic From Hell, which mm-hmm. is about Jack the Ripper.
Oh,
and one of the big parts of that comic is the guy who was essentially Jack the Ripper was driving around in a carriage and he'll be like, hey, you seem like you're in trouble, why don't you come into this carriage and have some grapes? And so, like, you know, when you kind of mentioned the rich man offering help, I kind of thought like, yeah, but you know, it's the rich man offering help to cut him up.
Yeah, I get what you mean. Yeah, so really, like, it was an homage to those kind of things. Yes.
I also like that the brightest thing on this page is the gold...
Ah! What do you call those, horse.
Though? They're not trappings. They're not bindings. Horse people would know. I don't...
Yes. Horse people.
I don't know.
Like, we're talking about the buckles... Bardings? On the thing. I have no idea. Any equestrians here?
Please write in at our place somewhere. I don't know.
Yeah, but yeah. I like how, in fact, what I say? No, not every page. Certain pages, there are like very obvious splashes of color.
Yes.
Yes, and this one is it. And they don't seem to be... details that you would want to have the reader notice. It's just like random splashes of color, which I actually like. Mm-hmm. Like, I like how that works as well. Yeah,
like on the next page, the most colorful bits are the flowers in the background.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the orange and yellow ones.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we have. Well, this rich man, and you said, I think you've covered this bit in your synopsis, but he invites this, well, nameless guy, whom we actually know is the Shade, to his house, and he lets him sleep for 3 days.
Yeah.
So, we see that his house is very nice. I think, like, everybody's dressed very nice, and there's, like, a nice spiral staircase with very pretty flowers. And so you are like, okay, because when I was reading this, I had no idea what's gonna come, right? So I was like, oh, okay, rich man. This must be the Shade. Who is this rich man? And then, why does this rich man not want him to leave the house?
Yeah, like it's, yeah, these whole opening chapters, it's one of those things where it's almost I don't know how to really talk about this comic, because, you know, I think it's one of those times where reading over it again and again, it almost gets better with rereading. You know, because it's kind of like there's a lot of this comic that feels off.
Yes, yes, I get what you mean. It's very unsettling.
Yeah, yeah, but to me, it's one of those things where, like, I never feel it really crosses far enough over to be unsettling.
Mm-mm.
But it still feels like a little off, like the like where you have this guy going, "Where am I and what year?" And he's like, "Why, this is London, my dear fellow, and the year is 1830." I'm sure that's not actually how he sounded, but you know, where someone just like randomly asks you like, "Where are we and what's the year?" And the response is like, "Oh, hey, it's 2017." Yeah. Like,
yeah,
it just seems weird to roll through that. And there's a lot of kind of little things like that.
Yeah, I get the matter of factness that they respond to this stranger and the way that they let this guy stay, and they, you know, I get when, like, when even the dialogue, it's very like, why are they playing charades? Is I get that feeling, like, it's the little things, the way they smile, like, how, "Oh, we let you sleep for 3 days. My wife wanted to summon the doctor, but sleeping is the best medicine, and no regular people would call the doctor," and things like that. And regular people wouldn't, they wouldn't smile like that. And I don't know, it's just very strange.
Yeah, yeah, and then there's just, and it's one of those things where I'm assuming it's the intention of the creators to make everything feel a bit off, you know, and kind of like going through that and kind of knowing what happens at the end of the issue and looking through it again, it's kind of like, oh, well, yeah, that's probably why everything feels off, is because of, you know, the reveal that we've already revealed. So it's like, oh, that's a bit more telling of it. But I'm not, I don't know. Am I making any sense whatsoever?
Yeah. You make sense to me, but I'm not sure if you're making sense to the listener. But I guess one thing that's come to mind is it feels very Stepford Wives.
Yes.
You know, like, it's a... it's very manufactured. The feeling, the way the family and the environment that the shade is being thrown into. But and it's for the reader, it's always something's not right, something's coming, something's not right, something's coming, but what? But, you know, is it gonna be now?
Yeah.
You know, every time something happens, like an action takes place, like, I'm on a page 5 now, I think, and things like one of the girls, I think it's the daughter, says, "Oh, I never did learn your name," and he's like, "Oh, yeah, I can't remember my name," and stuff like that, and they're like, normally people are like, "Oh, you can't remember your name, huh?" But they're like, "Oh, you know, it's okay. You don't have to remember your name. Stay in our house until you're well." That's the kind of feeling that this thing, this type of interaction keeps repeating itself.
Yeah, and then again on the on the next page, the page 6, where Shade is like opening the door and about to head outside, or at least staring outside, and the elder son comes up and has the, "Where would you be going at this hour? I felt like taking a walk. Oh, but my father fears in your weakened state the streets may be your undoing." You know, "We'd hate to see you suffer or get lost."
Yeah, and the Shade is completely logical about it. He says, like, maybe in a worse neighborhood, but this neighborhood is like, their gentry abound. He's like, these are like really rich and, you know, rich people who don't rob others because they already have everything. And then they don't give a good reason for that. They said, nonetheless, I much insist, da 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 da.
Yeah.
So, there's no good reason.
I wonder, because we get the only real sense of time we get is on that top of page 6, the days pass like hymns in a church. But we don't, outside of that, we don't really know between him being picked up on the streets and the events at the end of the comic, we don't really know how long he spent there.
Yeah.
And I do wonder if having that sense of time would it increase the amount of paranoia? Because, you know, like, I don't know, it could... One of the things I keep wondering about this is if, rather than reading this comic in the mid-morning of a really sunny day with beautiful weather, if I'd read this same comic at, like, 10 o'clock at night during a rainstorm, would I be feeling a bit more emotionally connected to it?
I get what you mean, yeah.
Because right now, like, I see it's really well executed, and the art, I mean, I whenever I see Gene Hadou stuff, like, I'm excited because his art's great. But at the same time, I never really feel too connected to the events in this story.
I see. I forgot what you mean. You know, one thing that might clue us in would be the way that they're dressed and the flowers that are blooming in the first couple of pages. So, because we know that on that day where, you know, everything culminated, it was cold, it was snowing, and the family was, like, dressed in furs and stuff like that. So, judging by that, if anyone who is, like, versed in botany would come to see, oh, that's that flower, it blooms in November, and, you know, they, yeah, and then they can, like, think, okay, London snowed in this time in 1838 or 1839, so maybe we'll say that about a couple of weeks to a few months. I don't know. I have no idea.
Oh, yeah, yeah, like, if flowers are blooming in the first pages of the issue, when they all go for their night outing, if the women are wearing, like, heavy fur-lined things, maybe it has been several months.
Yes. Maybe. Yeah. But we would need someone who...
Yeah.
Who knows their stuff. Yeah. I'm guessing, really, just by that, like, well, assuming that there aren't any flowers blooming when there's snow, it had to be a few weeks, at least.
Yes, yes.
Yes. That's a bit screwed up, huh?
Yeah,
with this family worth... okay.
And right now I'm looking at page 10.
Mm-hmm.
Where we kind of get them entering what is, you know,
the
business partner's mansion, that they're kind of saying, like, oh, this is where you're from. And the pre-shade is fearful, and they're all kind of calling out,
I get it. And one of the scary things about this is the family as a whole is involved in it.
Yes.
Right. Yes. It's like, why they're all screwed up.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So that was what bothered me.
I really do like the reveal. On that page 11, where, you know, almost everything has been in grays and browns, and then we get to page 11, and we're suddenly just met with pinks and reds.
Yeah.
And this just kind of continues for the rest of the book, where we do get lots of red.
Mm-mm-mm. Yeah, because of the it's blood, right? That's making everything so.
Yeah.
I feel like the way that this was treated was, there was this show called Tales from the Crypt.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it was like, well, that bit where, here, come into this place where you shall meet your demise. It felt like that.
Like, yes.
Yeah, and it was very, it's like, it's very matter of fact that this is going to happen because it's happened before, and we have killed what was the word, like, poor paupers men and paupers, and have had them take the blame, and you shall be like everyone. It's probably very routine for them, but it felt also like Piers was shooting himself in his foot because he was like, except you're obviously a little bit different, you know, you're educated obviously, and blah blah blah, and to me I'm like, oh, Piers,
yes.
You don't know what you're dealing with. Okay, anyway, which page are we on?
I'm looking at 13 and 14. Mm-hmm. Yeah, them just kind of together right before, I guess, the reveal, because we've got the whole, then on page 15 of the comic, we've right on the verge of the Shade becoming the Shade for reals.
Yeah, okay. Well, there's a little bit of action in 13, 14.
Yeah.
Which I quite liked, like the whole... it was very Cluedo in a way. It was like, okay, let's go. There are these characters, and we are all like, on the hunt. And they're all going to, like, look, we can sense the danger of, like, what's going to happen to him.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, because they are all murderers. All of them.
Mm-hmm.
Right. It's just this weird family that this was where I was like, oh, okay, so that's what the title's talking about. That's this is your family affair.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that's when it does kind of get, yeah, the creepiness factor does amp up when you do realize that everyone in the family is in on this and really happy to be in on this.
Mm-mm.
You know,
yeah.
On that page 15, the looks on all their faces are like, yay, we're about to commit murder and gain money. They're all so happy, and it's creepy.
Yeah.
That look on the guy's face when he says, there you are. Oh, man.
Yeah.
That's manic.
Yeah. Very horror movie. Very... I don't know. This is one of the things, again, that I feel only comic books can convey, because I feel like if this were moving pictures, it would be a little bit tacky and a little bit too funny, but this felt like real mania. Like I felt like having it as a picture, it really hammered in the emotion. That's just my take on it, because I don't know, maybe it's because I went to an art exhibition recently, and I was like, certain things are better when the pictures aren't moving. Like, certain emotions are captured more, like, in that moment, that it's frozen in that moment. So yeah, it just really spoke to me. So I really like how the pictures on page 15, be it the There You Are one or the family one, I really like how the mania, the intent is the intent and the intensity of their hearts. You know, it's all like frozen there, and it's very cool. Yeah.
What's interesting to me is kind of since you brought up Tales from the Crypt, I've been kind of thinking to myself is how I feel this would almost work better as like a little 50-minute drama. I feel they would have because I do agree there are certain things that comics do better, and I'll definitely agree that the mania and the expressions on page 15 do work in a way that could easily feel like overdone and cheesy if they were handled in a show. But I think kind of overall the slow build that this story requires is very challenging to accomplish in basically 22 pages. And I don't want to say I think the story fails at it, because I think that would be being too harsh. But I do think it is a challenge, and I do think that if this had the luxury of slowing things down and kind of highlighting, being able to underscore those moments of, don't go outside, we'd hate for anything bad to happen to you, and kind of hit those a little harder and that kind of trapped vibe, I feel it could have been a stronger story.
Yeah, I get what you mean. But I agree. Yeah.
But then again, just to kind of hit the points you just said, like looking at pages, to flip to pages 16 and 17, when the shadow demons come out, even with modern technology, it is really hard to imagine this... the shadow demon eruption being as powerful on moving pictures as it is here in these renditions.
I know, I get what I mean. There's gonna be a lot of green screen.
And here, even though it's a static image, I can totally see the movement.
I love this part where, it's very gory, but
yes,
the shadow demons come out, and I like how he didn't know that he had them.
Yeah,
because I had no idea until that moment, and boom, he had no idea what he was capable of doing, and then he starts to kill everyone. And they're bleeding from the shadow demon attacks.
Yes. Yeah.
And it must hurt, so we know that it's not just swallowing them into another dimension, but it's literally killing them.
And there's that the panel section of page 17 with what's the guy? Is that Sinclair? Is that the elder son's name with the knife?
Yes.
That somehow in my head, half of this guy's wounds are a result of him swiping at the creatures, but ending up stabbing himself. I can't say, is that true? I can't say, but somehow in my head, that's how it works. And the way he's swiping the knife, but the knife is still pointing at him, is it just works in my mind.
Yeah. That might have been something, yeah. And no, not my boy, not my son, screams Piers. Yes. And again, very Starman-ish. Even the most twisted of people care for their children.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
And whatever else we can say about these creepy, creepy individuals, they are a loving, close-knit family.
Yep. Crazy! Yeah, and then we see the daughter, Blanche or something. She's like almost gone, but she pleads for her life, and she wants to do. She offers to do anything the Shade wants her to do.
Yeah.
But and then you see his expression at the last bit. Do you see that one?
Yes.
Where he's like, like he's smirking, and then he kills her. That face, I feel like that's the Shade that that's the thing that this experience transformed him. It's all their fault.
Yes.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah, no, I think you're dead on. Haha.
Yeah. Yeah, and tiny detail noticing going on here, but you know how like the no sir is outlined in red?
Yes.
And then the no is also outlined red. And of course the previous page you have like red words as well. I like that bit because it ties back to the cover.
Yes.
So who colored this? I can't remember.
This was Gene Ha. He did both.
Oh,
the,
okay.
The art, I think, yeah, he did all the art, all the inking, and all the coloring.
Yeah. Ooh,
he's
wow.
listed as artist and colorist.
Oh, okay. Very nice.
Yeah, yes. Although, yeah. I think for the reds, I don't know if he did the coloring on that as well, or it might have fallen under the letterer, Chris Eliopoulos, who's great. He's one of those names that the more you read comics, the more he's like, wait a minute, he does a lot of good stuff.
He does. And one thing that I noticed is the color of the utensils. The cooking utensils.
Yeah.
Brass utensils.
Yes.
No, maybe brass or copper, I don't know. What's the difference between copper and brass? I don't know. But
one's copper and one's brass.
That's I always had the impression that they were related, but okay, no. Okay. Alright, so yeah, I like how they're not metal. They have it adds color.
It adds color, and it also is kind of there as a reminder, at least to me. I even though I'm just assuming that this is more expensive than just iron.
Yeah. Same, because they are rich people.
Yes.
Yeah, I have that same assumption as well.
I also Yay. Like how when we turn the page and get to page 20, the tone of the coloring shifts. I don't know if it counts as the palette or not, but we went from the last several pages of very dark and very dreary and gray, and suddenly the book it's outside again, but it feels much brighter, even though it's still, pale and dreary.
Yeah. It's London.
Yeah.
It's fair and dreary. Yeah, but I get what you mean. It is a shade lighter. Whoops. Okay. So over here we see that they're out in some square, and then we have, my dear sir. I actually recognized him from the Starman. There was like this little back issue. That I knew that this was Charles Dickens.
I did not recognize, but I was wondering. Once he said Charles, like, all right, right, right. But I was wondering if they're going to be name dropping in someone.
Who did you think of?
I wasn't quite sure, like, because he didn't seem to have the Oscar Wilde look, but from what they've told, yeah, I think Charles Dickens probably the best choice.
Yeah, I love the choice of having, you see that bottom panel there where they have the reflections and they're talking? I like stuff like that so much. It's like,
yes.
They're talking, it's upside down, and you see that it's a puddle, and you know that it's been like raining or at least snowing, and then, and the words are right side up, and, I don't know, art!
Good job!
Yes! Okay, and we do get a feel of that era where, you know, people bustling square and all sorts of people, and then your friend just comes up to you and say, "Hey, hi!" And then like, that's the like, really? Well, I guess so. I mean,
no. I think like all of the art chores in this are just handled so nicely. Like to have. Such detailed panels, like all the way through, and to fill them up so much, but they never feel cluttered.
Yeah, agree. Just
fantastic.
Yeah. Okay, shall we go to page 21?
Let's do it. Where we find out there's two survivors. Oh no!
Yeah, in the cemetery, and they're in the cemetery, and they're like, we are going. To seek revenge.
Vengeance.
Yeah. It's so strange because, like, they must be really young.
Yeah.
And they know what was happening with the family. They knew the workings. Like, they knew that their family were cold-blooded murderers. Mm-hmm. And their children.
Yeah, like, that's a really interesting to think about it because it works, you know. I mean, they said, we will have this man dead if it takes our lifetimes and those of our offspring.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it does kind of make you wonder how they go about enlisting their family.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, it's a screwed up. Okay, And
we got on the last page. Yeah, we got the shade in his library writing about what he'd known and what he'd forgotten and what he should have known.
Yeah.
Da-da-da.
And we know that this bit he wrote like way into the future because he talks about things that happened in 1931.
Yes.
So, yeah, I really like that. I can't remember if the descendants of Emma and Rupert, was it Emma? And Rupert? They were featured in the story. In Starman, I can't remember if they appeared in the throwback thing.
You know, I
felt like they did.
They might have, like, one of them might have come up, but I know we've gotten lots of references to the Ludlows before. I feel very confident saying we've had that.
Mm-hmm. And it's a strange flyaway observation.
Yes.
Rupert and Emma, right? The actor and actress that played Ron and Hermione in the Harry Potter films, their real names are Rupert Green and Emma Watson. So this was like, strange. Ooh. Yeah.
Strange. So what you're saying is they're going to team up and they're going to try and kill the Shade.
Yes. I don't know. Yeah. So... last page, I like how we realize that from the beginning of the issue, this was a journal entry, very Starman. So yes. The bits where, you know, it looks like torn pieces of parchment and the cursive writing, it's all the Shade recording this somewhere for posterity. And I don't know, I just feel like in the grand scheme of things, this might be significant because this is important enough for him to write down, to want to like leave a record or something. And we know for sure that he is going to give these journals to Jack. and there's like this whole meta thing going on, like, oh, we're reading this and we're witnessing this, and Jack is going to read them in the future, and we're going to read the same things as Jack. Yeah, things like that.
It's wheels within wheels.
Yeah, it is. Okay, end of part one, but there's that bit at the back. Are we going to...
I don't know. Why don't we hold on to all the writing? Because, you know, it ends with those two pages of text. And I think this tells a complete story.
Yeah.
Throughout the miniseries. So do we just want to do a... Hold off on discussing the text pieces until the very end of the Shade miniseries?
Okay, that sounds like a good idea, because I don't know anything, like, right now. Yeah, I haven't. This is my first time reading it. So, yes, that's a good idea.
Yes. Well, next issue and episode, we're going to continue with the Shades miniseries. The artist changes, but the writing team is the same.
Okay.
So do you have any final thoughts on Shade issue one?
I really like the... of course I like the characters, but the way the setting was drawn... I can't help but guess this... Well, it's London, it's not Opal, but... There's this bit outside the Opal streets are crisply cool. I think that last scene there, we didn't say this, but that last scene, the Shade was writing the journal.
Oh, looking through the window, yeah.
Yes. So I really like how this ties in with Starman. I think that's my favorite thing about the story. Like, it doesn't forget and it doesn't let you forget. Yeah, so that's what I really liked about this. How about you?
You know, like, I think it was good, and I mean, I did have some kind of issues with it that I've already kind of gone into, but I think, like, it does do a good job of telling us, you know, of revealing about the Shade and kind of the origin of the Ludlow issue. Like, I'm glad to have read it, and I'm really looking forward to the next installment.
This isn't your first time reading it, right?
No. I've read these two or three times before.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But, I mean, it's been so long that I can't quite remember what happened where and which happened when. Blah, blah, blah.
Okay. Yes, thank you for the beautiful artwork, creators.
Yes.
It was very pretty.
Yeah.
And a nice story.
So, where can people find you on the internet?
I'm mostly on Twitter, and some say YouTube.
Some say. It is spoken about, story and song.
I would like to post more on YouTube, but life is happening. My username on all the possible social networks that you can find me on is Quek Channel, Q-U-E-K Channel. And yeah, that's where you can find me. How about you, Brent?
You can find me on deadlytroubadour.com. You can find me on Twitter at deadtroubadour. And, you know, you can always go to what you call it, that there Facebook, and just go ahead and like either Comics League International, or you can like the Brent Thomas author page.
Yeah. Okay. And so I guess our next issue will come soon.
Yes, it will. It will be the second one, and hopefully we'll be back on a regular schedule for you know, hopefully for good, but there'll probably be another mistake.
But we do all this because we love what we do, and it will be nice if you guys could support Brent.
Oh, yes.
Contributing to his Patreon.
Yeah, you can go to patreon.com/Brent Thomas, and, you know, even a buck goes a long way and helps me feel that internet love that we all need.
Yes. Okay.
Cool.
So, we'll see you guys next time.
See you next time.
Bye.
There's a star. Children use it, let all the children boogie.